welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. Every Australian over 50 has a chance to be screened for colorectal cancer. A positive result puts the patient on a path of colonoscopy and, following that, regular surveillance. Making sure surveillance colonoscopies are performed at the appropriate times is important for early prevention. In 2000, a nurse-led model of recall management was introduced at Flinders Medical Centre in Adelaide. That program was called SCOOP. The results were impressive. The most recent audit of SCOOP is published online by the MJA today. Dr. Erin Simons is Senior Research Scientist at Flinders Medical Centre, and she's my guest on the pod today. Why did this research need doing?
So this is a little bit different to what the usual bowel cancer screening program is. So when people, hopefully when they do their bowel cancer screening test, which is not very popular in Australia, unfortunately.
No, I know. We're bad at it, aren't we?
Yeah, I think it's the current figures are about 41% of people doing their free test. But what happens if people get a positive test from the fecal test, they need colonoscopy. And what can happen then is about probably around 45% of those people might have something found in their colonoscopy. A very small proportion could have cancer found, but a bigger proportion will have polyps found. And
yes.
So these polyps can be adenomas, which are sort of pre-cancers.
Mm-hmm.
But the good news is, if they're removed, we can, you know, it stops them turning into cancer.
Right. Can they be removed at colonoscopy, like during the colonoscopy?
If there's a polyp found, the colonoscopy, it kind of has like a, you can sort of imagine it like a little lasso attached to the end. And so the specialist just lassoes out that polyp and, it's removed because they're normally only, say, 5 millimetres in diameter, maybe 10 millimetres in diameter. Yeah, it's very easy for the gastroenterologist or surgeon to remove that just during the colonoscopy procedure.
How good are Australian hospitals and physicians at making sure their patients comply with screening guidelines?
The screening in itself is provided by the National Bowel Cancer Screening Program.
Yes.
So that's the government federal initiative. The GP hopefully takes on a role where they encourage their patients. But what I was mentioning before, that if any of these polyps, so say if someone does have a positive test result and then they do find some of these polyps at their colonoscopy and remove them, which is great,
yes.
But it still means because they've grown them once before,
mm-hmm.
there's a good chance they could grow them again.
Yes.
And so that's why someone needs to have ongoing colonoscopies. So that's what we call surveillance colonoscopies.
Okay.
And that's what we've been focusing our research on, the
yes.
SCOOP program.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a way of making sure that people have their colonoscopies when the national guidelines say that they should.
Do the guidelines say? How often should they be having them?
In general, the current guidelines are between 3 and 5 years. So it depends what's found at each colonoscopy.
Right.
So someone has a sort of a bigger adenoma found, then the guidelines suggest we need to see you again in 3 years because that gives us the best timing to remove anything else that's grown again in that time and prevent any future cancers from occurring. But if it's just sort of a smaller adenoma found, then they would say come back in 5 years. And also there are people in the community that they have a history of, a family history of bowel cancer. So say if someone's mother had bowel cancer before the age of 55, that puts that person at a higher risk themselves. So they also need to have these regular colonoscopies. So it's the people that have had something found already at colonoscopy or the people that have a significant family history of bowel cancer that we need to keep them in the surveillance program so that we can make sure that they're being looked after in a timely fashion.
So about 15 years ago now, a program called SCOOP started in South Australia. Tell us about SCOOP.
So that was established. The gastroenterologist saw a need to ensure that the colonoscopies were being offered when they should, you know, to make sure that there was a good system in place to ensure that people were getting the correct healthcare. And so the physicians established a computer-based recall system. So people that needed to have ongoing colonoscopies, the recall dates were added into this program. And the special other thing about the SCOOP program is that the decisions are made by the trained nurses, so the specialist nurses. So the nurses will review what was found at each colonoscopy, and based on the national guidelines, they will then make the recommendation of, okay, this patient needs to come back in 3 years or this patient needs to come back in 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then it's all in the computer so that we can then, when it's time, we can send the recall letter to the patient to ensure that everything's happening as it should. Now, this sounds like a pretty, you know, sort of straightforward process.
Sure.
So it's actually surprising when you look at what's actually happening in other countries, and mm-hmm. recommendations were just not made following guidelines. So before the SCOOP program actually was established in 2000, the number of procedures that were given correct guidelines, like recall guidelines, it was originally only 46% were compliant with the guidelines. Yeah.
I'm chatting today with Dr. Erin Simons, who is the lead author of a paper published by the MJA detailing the success of the SCOOP program of bowel cancer surveillance. That paper is available at mja.com.au and is open access.
In most cases, the doctors were saying bringing them back earlier than necessary. And of course, that adds a lot of colonoscopies to the waiting list.
Yes.
Which is not good for anyone.
No. Because there is a risk involved in, I mean, it's a significant risk. It's not a huge risk, but it is a significant risk, isn't it?
No, there's definitely risk of any procedure you go through is associated with risks.
So when SCOOP came in, what difference did it make to compliance with standards?
Well, what they found is they did an audit of what the system was like 3 months before SCOOP started and then 3 months after it had commenced, and they found that the compliance with the guidelines had improved from 46% up to 96%.
Wow.
So it was,
that's pretty
it was incredible.
Yeah.
And I give the credit definitely to the nurses for that.
I bet.
They keep everybody in line.
I from reading your paper, the physicians also improved too, didn't they? But not as much as the nurse-led model.
Correct. And so because we have now spread the SCOOP program, it just started off in Flinders Medical Centre and then it spread to a few different other hospitals in South Australia. But because there's not always the resources to enable to have a specialist nurse involved, we did have to look at other ways that we could still help deliver the correct guidelines. And so for the private hospitals, it looked into using a paper-based model where all the guidelines were provided on the paper-based model. And so the physician would be able to tick some boxes and then see what that recommendation should be. And using that achieved an 83% compliance.
Why do you think the nurse-led model is more successful than the physician-led model?
It's very thorough, the nurse-led model. They're familiar. They don't only look at that one colonoscopy procedure for each patient. They'll also review the patient's history as well, because sometimes the timing can be influenced by the previous findings as well. And so sometimes, you know, some cases can be a little bit complicated, and so the nurses have the resources available to fully evaluate each case.
Is that a time thing, do you think?
It is a time thing as well, because this is the, this position was set up so that this was the role for the
right.
nurses to evaluate each case, whereas it's not set aside as a time thing for the physicians. 83% is still a fantastic compliance compared to what's happening elsewhere. But the closer we can get to 100%, the better.
This current audit that you've just reported on, what was the difference between the private hospital setting and the public tertiary or teaching hospital setting?
Yep, so this is where we had, so in the public hospital settings, that's where we've got the nurse-led model with the nurses.
So there wasn't a nurse-led model in the private hospitals?
No, this is where we tested out the physician-led model using a paper-based guide.
So are you confident that it's the nurse rather than the setting that's making the difference?
I believe so.
Does this prompt any, I mean, obviously Scoops worked really well. What about using it nationally? What's the next step?
Oh, that would be fantastic and something that I would like to look into further. Mm. Of course it is, resources are needed to enable the specialist nurse to take on this role.
Sure.
And I think that is possibly one of the limitations that other hospitals haven't yet taken up this model.
Mm. But surely there's a cost-effectiveness factor here. I mean, if you're saving on the number of colonoscopies, would that pay for the nurses?
We are actually doing a cost-effectiveness study now, and
it does look
very promising that that the costs are covered. But I guess the cost it actually comes out of maybe different pools.
Yeah, of course it does.
So, yeah, so while the department itself would have to pay for the staffing, the savings then, I guess,
going to a different
go
bucket.
Elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I have been at the international and national gastroenterology conferences. We do present our research related to the Scoop program, and it's well known by other hospitals. And so the ultimate aim is to, get this great program out around the nation to ensure people are getting the optimal care. To be able to get that long-term compliance, it's a really good model that's working well. But despite, even when you've got great compliance with making the recommendations as they should, there is, of course, still the occurrence of procedures that don't happen when they should still.
Yes.
So that's what we also reported on in our paper, is that to look at what the actual practice was. And we found that because of factors such as, patient needs or symptoms, some of the procedures, even though they were recommended to happen on time, they would still happen early. And that's just what you're going to find in every system. And so it's good to know, if we can get the settings right to start with, it then sort of provides that better baseline for allowing for variations in it. Well, I think the other thing that we've shown in our article is not only the long-term compliance following guidelines, but also the fact that because we are getting, the majority of the procedures are happening as they should, what it's resulted in is a reduction in the number of cancers over time. Even though people are under regular surveillance, there is, of course, there's still a risk that cancers can develop because these people are at higher risk.
Sure.
And everything is done as best as it can be to prevent this from happening. But unfortunately, there still are some cancers. But what we found that over time, the number of the incidence of cancer within the program has really dropped down. And we've also found that the numbers of the nastier adenomas, the numbers of them being picked up, has increased.
Okay.
And so by removing them, it then prevents the cancers from developing further. This is also a very nice outcome to see those changes over time.
So the ratio of adenomas to cancers has risen.
Yep. So we're finding more, we're removing more adenomas.
Yes.
Meaning less cancers are developing.
Thanks, Erin.
Thank you so much.
No worries. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.